Nothing is going right. Well, cheer up from Los Angeles. A big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide blog talk radio network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy. I'm going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. God, it even sounds nasty, doesn't it? We have an exciting show planned for you today. Robert Seidel, former caregiver to his very healthy 99-year-old dad, now deceased, unfortunately, nationally published author, motivational speaker, attorney, minister, and radio host of the weekly radio show Success and the Law on CBS Radio 100.5 FM, KXNT, Las Vegas, Nevada. So stay tuned. This is going to be a very interesting show, to say the least. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they tell you the most important thing that they have to tell you, and that is if there's an emergency, or as they say, in the unlikely event of an emergency, and your oxygen mask falls out of the ceiling because of a loss of cabin pressure, please, please, please put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is because you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs, and they know that. And you know what, folks? Caregivers are the same way. You see, if you don't put your needs above your care receiver's needs, you won't be of any help to anybody. And unfortunately, caregivers are just built that way. They're wired that way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch. And unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you are stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and the show, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, by going to my website, DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, Nass, DaveNass.com. The name of our show also works, if that's too difficult for you. If you can't remember all of that, it's Dave, the caregiver's caregiver.com. Now, register your visit with me on my website, and guess what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you two really neat gifts. First, a PDF copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, the story of my amazing wife and our journey together. So don't miss out on these cool freebies. The other one is a very cool report called 10 Mistakes Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest, Robert. Welcome, Robert. Sorry, I had to go through
it's absolutely wonderful to be here. I mean, it's wonderful to be alive, so I'm just glad to be able to share this moment with you.
Well, thank you. What a wonderful thing to say. Sorry I had to sit through all of that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. So,
it's my pleasure. And Go ahead now.
You know, we're just so polite. We're talking over each other, and I'm going to let you go first because, after all, you are the guest.
You know, I wanted to say, you said something at the very beginning about grief. And, yeah, grief is a very fascinating process. I mean, it's easy to talk about that when you're not deeply in the middle of it at the moment. But it's when my but I want to say one thing to everybody listening. Grief doesn't have to take any particular course, and it's not even inevitable when somebody dies. And the reason I want to share two different stories, but it may happen. But I want people, so either whatever person's real experience is right for them, is what I want to say. But I want to share two different experiences when my mother and my dad died. My mother, I'm somebody who has a deep faith in God, and so does my mother. And I notice I talk in the present tense, even though she has passed on about 6 years, 7 years ago now. But what I want to say is that when she, the last year of her life, that was the way I like to talk about things, it was not a good experience for her to be in her body. I mean, at that point, her mind had degenerated a lot. I mean, she still luckily recognized us and didn't know much else, but she did recognize the people closest to her. She never lost that. But an awful lot of other things, she got very confused, and her body really became very non-cooperative. It's, by the way, there's a pretty bird chirping in the background in case you happen to hear it.
You must be outside looking at a beautiful scenery.
I am, as a matter of fact, yes. But so what I want to say is when she passed, I had seen her just about a week before, and she lived in a different town, and it was amazing to me. I mean, I have, this is just an honest experience, and I tell people this, and I realize it's somewhat very difficult for people to from people to believe, but I'm just going to say it anyway because it might help at least some people. When she passed from her body, there was so much love I felt, and my sister felt the same thing. For at least 3 days, I was just filled with joy. I mean, an absolute happiness.
Really?
And, I mean, just it'd be like somebody just surrounded me with this great joy and love and comfort and happiness and contentment. And, I mean, everything you could possibly seek. You see, that's so far from the worldly way of looking at transition from our bodies. But the bottom line is that was real, 100% real. And to this day, I've never really experienced the classic sense of grief with my mom because I just haven't. So I've always just felt joy. And because she lived a good life, you know, I think it's completely different. If somebody dies and has their life cut short, and that can be a much more difficult thing to deal with. And if, to be honest with you, even if somebody's older and has lived a good life, you still may experience grief. So I'm not in any way denying that. But I do want to create the possibility for people to open themselves to the thought that grief in the classic worldly sense is not inevitable. So just a little thought to share with people because it wasn't for me. Now I'll talk about my dad's passing. He moved to Las Vegas, where I live, about 7 or 8 years before he died, which I'm really will always be grateful for. And by the way, I do suggest to anybody, if you have that opportunity and you could make it work, I think it's a great idea. My dad bought a separate house. So it wasn't in my home, but it was about 10 minutes from my house. He, for the first 5 or 6 years, drove. And believe me, that was with angels with him because he never
How
had an
old was
accident.
He?
He was 96 when he stopped driving.
Wow.
My siblings really thought he should have stopped driving sooner, and in a logical world, they might be right, but he was so dependent on it. It was such a part of his life. You know, I just kept going with my intuition, and I'm really ultimately lucky. I got lucky. I mean, some of your listeners might find this a bit amusing, but there was one time not too long before he stopped driving. I live out in the country, and he was driving out that way, and there's kind of an open road, and he got pulled over by a ranger out in our area, and the guy goes, you know, you were driving 90 miles an hour. My dad says, well, I couldn't have been driving that fast. And the guy says, well, just keep the speed down and just let him go. So he didn't get a ticket or anything. Now, I don't really, my dad to this day says that, oh, well, I don't think he was serious. And maybe he didn't hear him right. I don't really know. But the bottom line is he might have been driving too fast because he couldn't see too well to see his speedometer because of the difference of lightness between outside and a speedometer. So, and right around that period, within not too long after that, we took him in to have his eyes checked. And his eyes, and this was a difficult day for me and for him. I kind of knew this was maybe the last day of his driving because he kept telling me whenever I was driving somewhere, can you read that sign? Can you read that sign? I said, yeah. He goes, I can't. And my eyes are getting worse. And so I had a sense that things were degenerating. So I took him into an eye doctor. We had him checked. And I pretty much knew he really shouldn't be driving. I took him into the eye doctor. the eye doctor says, your vision, even with glasses, is not very good. And I said, well, ask me this, does it meet minimum driving standards? The doctor said, no. And I said, Dad, that means you can't drive. Because if the doctor is saying you can't drive, now I'm an attorney also, as you mentioned, it's in your records that you can't drive, that you can't see well enough to drive. And if you get in an accident, you're in trouble. We came home that day, and he never drove again. But for those of you out there facing this, he actually, some people take it more gracefully, he had great difficulty. Some of you will probably find this amusing, but he had some land back in Arkansas, and he started planning a secret plan to go back to Arkansas, where he thought he knew a woman that he could marry and still drive, because in Arkansas, he figured they don't care if you drive in this little town.
That's funny.
So he had that all planned out. So anyway, that conversation went on for months, and he could not, for at least 6 months, the first thing he'd tell everybody that he saw was, could you believe this? I've been driving since I was 12 years old, and now they're, which he really was, because he was born in 1913, he says, and now they're telling me I can't drive. You know, okay, that's terrible.
Wow.
Anyway.
Well, I want to back up a little, because there's some people, you haven't been properly introduced, so let's back up. Please tell us who you are, for those of you who have never heard of you, and what you do for a living, and why you're probably the most unusual attorney that anyone would ever meet. How's that for a question?
That is an interesting question, and there's some degree of truth to it. I have been a practicing lawyer for 37 years. In fact, I worked for a firm that represented President Reagan and Howard Hughes and a lot of famous people, at least Howard Hughes' estate after he died, but many, many other famous people. And I worked there for a number of years, and then I came over to Nevada. Now, in the meantime, not too long after I started my practice of law, I went through what I call a spiritual awakening and became very devoted to my spiritual journey and trying to come as close as I can to God. And I then became ordained as a minister. So I am an ordained minister. I think I was ordained in 1982. I've been ever since then. In my law practice, I mean, this is a perfect example. Yesterday, I had two sweet people come in, and it seems that, I have to be honest, I believe God sends the people to me. Because these two people were talking to me, and they both have been quite active in a church, but they moved to Nevada, and they haven't been since that time. And so I was telling them different churches they could go to, and I said, would you like me to say a prayer? And it was a nice young couple with two young children. They said, please. And so I sat there and prayed for them, that they be blessed and guided and directed. And they loved that. Believe it or not, that happens to be 2 to 3 times every single week, something like that. And I end up praying for clients, you know, who maybe they've been in a bad accident and they're scared they're going to get sued, or they don't know what they're going to do because they may be losing their job. There could be 100 reasons. They may be suffering from anxiety disorder. And now it doesn't interfere with any medical care. If they're open to it, I say, would you like a prayer? And if they give any hesitance, like, no, that's the end of that. Well, you'd be surprised. Most people say yes, they would like that. So,
well, that's awesome. I can honestly say I don't know too many attorneys who are Christians. In fact, I don't even know if I know one. Well, I know one now. But what's the area of law that you specialize in?
Over the years, I've done probably over 1,000 bankruptcies and 1,000 divorces. I learned, by the way, a tremendous amount. I like to learn from people. So I've met people going through bankruptcy, losing, you know, most of their stuff, and over 1,000 couples going through divorce, and usually ended up talking to one or both of them quite a bit in depth. But now, for at least the last 20 years, I've limited my practice exclusively to injuries and accidents, helping people that have gone through accidents and needed compensation and help to get medical care and things like that.
So I bet you've seen a lot of your clients go through the grief process or actually in the grief process, and you probably had an opportunity to help them with their denial and their anger and their bargaining and their depression, et cetera. Can you comment a little on some of the people that you have maybe ministered to who were going through the grief process?
Yes, I can. In fact, I want to tell one little prayer story that just reminded me of it. I'm going to mention my dad's personal grief he went through. But I'll tell you what about in 1 second. But I got to tell you a kind of a funny but a very, very miraculous story. Actually, well, but not exactly funny, but it's fun, has a very happy ending. I had a client, a very kind guy. I mean, I've been very fortunate to have very nice clients. This guy was driving along, and he had an accident, and the airbag came out. His chest hit, or maybe it was before airbags, now that I think about it. His chest hit the steering wheel. Anyway, he had a heart attack at that very moment. He went into the hospital, and they treated him, then they let him out, and he got a bad infection, as often happens, went back in and went back out. Finally, his bills were up to like $800,000. So I was with his wife, a very sweet woman from Japan. They had met in the military. They never had any children. It was just them. And I said to them, they told his wife, he is going to die by tomorrow. And they had me bring a will in, so I did create a will and took it in. And I went and talked to him there in the hospital. I said, would you like me to say a prayer for you? So he and his wife and I held hands because, you know, he's been told he's going to die within 12 hours. In fact, probably not through the night he would live. So we said a prayer, and as so often happens, this is what I love about prayer, a great love descended upon us, and I could feel a great joy. We did that. Who knows how long we prayed, 10 or 15 minutes maybe. I left, walked out of the hospital. Lo and behold, the next day he didn't die, and guess what? He made a full recovery. And they started calling him at the hospital the Miracle Man. That's what they call him, the Miracle Man, because they really, truly could not explain why he lived. And he made a full recovery. And this is just a happy ending story. We got him a great settlement. He was able to move up to Northern Nevada, buy a pretty house, and he and his wife, I don't have kept track of them since that time, but went on to a very happy future. But he did tell me when I left that day after the prayer, and this is, he said he figured he'd never get out of that hospital alive.
Great
he
story.
Just was there. Now, but isn't that a neat story? That prayer, so prayer works, folks. If you're out there listening, I want you to hear this. Remember, prayer works. Now, the thing I want to share about grief with my dad and ministering, probably one of the hardest things I ever had to do, is I've lost two brothers in the last 10 years, both of which, one older than me and one younger than me, which means my dad lost two of his kids. One was only 48 years old and left two young kids behind. And the other one was 55 years old and left the kids that were just in their early 20s behind, or in their mid-20s. At least they were got a little bit older, but still, it was tough. And for my dad, people always say it's one of the hardest things for a parent to deal with that grief.
It's not natural to lose your children before you die.
Yeah, that's what people say. Unfortunately, I always have to say to people, but God never signed on to that plan. You know, it's sort of humorous to say that, but and historically, 150 years ago, to give a little frame of reference, Thomas Jefferson lost 5 out of 6 of his children before they were adults. Wow.
My guest last week before you was a bereaved parents. They had lost a 6-month-old child, which, you know, it's never easy when that happens. And many times, over 50% of the time, it causes a breakup in the marriage. Fortunately, you know, they worked through it. They were in grief for a long time, about 4 years or so. And then God just kind of put a peace over them, and they felt great. And then the next thing you knew, they were pregnant. They didn't even plan it. And now they're very, very happy with two beautiful daughters. Things work out. We don't know why we go through the valleys, but it's to help others. And this show has really helped a lot of people who are actually going through that now. So all things work for good to them that love him and are called according to his purpose. God's a great recycler. He doesn't waste anything. He uses every tear and he turns it around and makes it good.
I agree with you 100%.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it. Let's take our break. We will be back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Robert Seidel, attorney, minister, and just all-around amazing guy. Robert, before the break, we were talking about the actual process of grief, you know, the anger, the denial, the bargaining, the depression. We were talking about your parents and maybe some of your clients. I want to let our audience hear some examples of some of these stages, because I believe a lot of them are in the grief process. They don't even know they're in the grief process. So maybe if they heard some examples, they might, you know, a light might go on in their head and say, hey, you know, maybe that's why I'm so angry. You know, I'm grieving or whatever. So go right ahead.
Well, yeah, let me talk two different things about the grief my dad went through and how I helped minister to him. By the way, meanwhile, while dealing with my own grief separately about my siblings, my two brothers dying, and then separately I'll talk about the grief I experienced related to my dad dying. Related to my, I'm the one who had my youngest brother got pancreatic cancer. By the way, there's a miracle in the middle of the story, but he still ended up dying. But here's where it starts. We'd gone away for a family trip, and my brother started complaining of abdominal pain. Now, he thought he just had some sort of abdominal problem, you know, that's all. When he got, but it started to get very intense, so when he got back home, he got checked out, and that very day, he found out he had pancreatic cancer. And then he was checked out, and they found out that not only was it pancreatic cancer, it already spread to his brain, his lungs, all through his body. That's one of the problems with pancreatic cancer. It's why people frequently only live about 30 days after they're diagnosed, 30 to 60 days, because it's often diagnosed very late. So we were fully and my other brother had passed away just about 6 months earlier. But I'm starting first with the younger brother. And so my dad had already been reeling from the loss of my one brother, and suddenly we'd gone on this family trip. Then I get a call from my sister-in-law, and she says he has pancreatic cancer, maybe even directly from him. So I had the duty, or assumed it, I guess I would say, to tell my dad about this. And that was that my brother had cancer. And that was one of the hardest things. My dad was a doctor. That was one of the hardest things I've had to do in my whole life, and it was really a very heartbreaking experience for me to go through personally. When I told him that, I could just see my dad crumbling inside and just feeling, oh, no. And he held up his hands. How many kids do I have left? And he's like, he had to stop and think about it for a minute. It was like such an emotional blow to him. It was really, I guess I'm happy that I was the one that shared that with him, because at least I could be there for him. But at the same side, it was a very painful thing to have to be a part of. And it was very, very awful for him to have to hear that.
Obviously, when he lost his car and his driving privileges, he was going through denial because, you know, he wanted to go, you know, this ridiculous plan that was not practical at all about going back to Arkansas and marrying a woman, and they don't care if you drive in Arkansas. That would certainly be an example of denial, wouldn't it? Do you have any others?
Yes, well, I do, specifically related to this brother who had cancer. So what happened with my dad is that we went up to visit my brother fairly soon, and I do I've done a lot of prayer work and healing work, and so is my sister, and we did a lot of prayer work for my brother. Now, here's the miracle part that's really fantastic. My brother pulled out of it, got a full, to us it's almost like an eternity now, a full 2 years, about 85% of that was very healthy and normal. Even to the point he was volunteering at his kid's school up to 3 weeks before he died. So we got two wonderful years, which really was a wonderful gift to us, because having just lost my other brother, it gave us a chance to, first of all, adapt somewhat And then secondly, to just get a chance to communicate with him. Now, in the meantime, though, my dad was living here in Las Vegas. He definitely went into levels of denial. As my brother started to get worse again, we went up there and visited him early on, but my dad didn't really want to go visit him when he got worse. So this is your denial part. You know, I understand why. He didn't want to see his son in that condition. He didn't want to face it. He just wanted to put it out of his mind. I talked him into it, not just me, my sister, and I have another brother, too. Luckily, we had five people in our family, five children. We persuaded him he would not be happy if he did not go. So we flew up there and did do that. But the point I want to stress is that he was in a lot of denial. I would tell him multiple different times, Jim is getting worse, and he really wouldn't let that in.
Yeah.
Denial is a big thing, and for all of us sometimes when we're facing a painful experience, we just want to deny it. And by the way, I've been through some tremendous denial in my life in other ways, but leaving that aside in grief also. But with my dad, we got him up there so he could be with my brother, which I know he told me he was so glad that I did. He also came up to the memorial service. So we did both of those things. After my brother died, I ministered a lot to my dad because helping him with his grief. And because my dad has never had a strong sense of afterlife. I mean, he's a doctor, and a lot of medical people, a lot of engineering kind of personalities, a lot of scientific kind of personalities have a hard time opening themselves up to God. It's been my experience, certainly not all. So my dad, he was like, do you really think he's okay? I say, Dad, I know he's okay. He's okay. And he's moved on, and things are going to be okay, just okay for him, just fine. And so I would talk to him a lot and share different things with him. And that gave him a lot of comfort. And so I ministered to him about the loss of both of his brothers on and off, honestly, for the rest of his life, which is at least several years, 3 or 4 years after that. And it periodically would come up with him. He'd suddenly start crying and thinking about the loss of one of his kids. And then I would help minister to him, and it would help pull him out of that. So
what a blessing to have you in his life. Did he live with you for a period of time in the same home?
No, he never actually lived with me. He lived 10 minutes away, which probably was the best of both worlds. I would stop. I talked to him just about every day. If I had any advice to anybody out there, although lots of people for one reason or another do not do this, but if your parents are getting older, if you can call them as much as you can, even every day if you can, you will never regret the time you spent doing that, ever.
Yes, and you just reminded me, I have to call my mother today. She's at a assisted living place, a little dementia going on. She still knows who I am, but I can visit her, and then the next day I can speak to her, and she'll say, when are you coming? You haven't been here in weeks. And I says, Mom, I was there yesterday. But when you were talking about, thanks for that reminder, by the way, when you were talking about the 2 extra years with your brother, you know, what went in through my mind is, what if, here's a novel idea, what if we treated all of our loved ones as if we just had a few more days with them, that they were going to die? Wouldn't we elevate the quality of relationship that we currently have with them?
You know, I am 1,000% in agreement with you there. I'm absolutely positive. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you an interesting irony for my brother. He was married at the time, and it's his only marriage. And as I say, two young kids. I think they were 10 and 12 at the time he actually died, or maybe 11 and 13. Anyway, but what I want to say is that probably two of the best years of his marriage were the last 2 years of his life. And it's because he knew, and you know, he would tell me things like, well, he knew he probably wouldn't be there that long. I remember going shopping once with him, and his wife was buying certain things, and he said, and he might have previously disputed that. He goes, well, you know, I've got to let go now because I'm not going to be able to control everything. I would tell you those two last years were very, very happy for him with his marriage and with his children. And even just being alive, he would tell me he'd look out and just see the pretty trees and things, and he'd see the miracle of life. So you're right. If we could get that awareness, you know something? In fact, if any of you ever, have you ever gone to Costco? Have you ever been to Costco?
Sam's Club.
Oh, same difference. Well, let me just say this. I never could forget this. I remember it almost all the time. When my brother first got out of the hospital, you know, again, it was a reprieve for him too, because we didn't think he'd ever get out. And he said he got out a little bit over a month after he was in there, and then he got a full 2 years out of the hospital. So we were on the way home. We stopped by Costco, and he got on one of those little electric carts because he couldn't walk very well at that point. He eventually got to walk completely well, but still right then he couldn't. We were going in Costco, and he goes, gosh, I'm telling this to all your listeners because it's worth remembering this. He said, it's like being in Disneyland. He goes, I'm suddenly back in reality, and what an amazing experience this is. And so if we could see it that way, if we could learn to see it that way, Dave, you know what? This life would turn into a heaven for us.
Absolutely. You know, that's why Alcoholics Anonymous is so successful, because there's nothing worse or more difficult than going through recovery of, you know, getting over your addiction, whether it's an addiction of alcohol or drugs or sex or you know, being a busybody, whatever it is, because their philosophy is, hey, just get through today, one day at a time. And basically, that's why your brother's marriage got better, because he knew that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, we can't handle, you know, years and years and years of being good or staying off this drug or not touching alcohol. But, you know, maybe we can do it for 24 hours. Maybe we can do it for a week. You know what I mean? It's a great strategy.
Yes. I certainly don't want to leave the impression it wasn't a good marriage before that, but I would tell you it developed a new level of joy and happiness because of the perception that it wasn't going to go on forever. And by the way, I want to just throw this idea out to you. When we get about 5 minutes from the end, if you'd like, it's totally up to you. I'll do the same thing I say to clients. I'd love to say a little prayer for you and for your listeners. That's just, I'll leave that in your hands, because that's kind of, I feel like
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. We've done that before, and you know, God is the reason I'm still here, and I know He's the reason you're around as well. You know, just tell the audience how we met. We are the member of the same mastermind group, Craig Duswalt's Rockstar Marketing Boot Camp. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in surrounding myself with people who are more successful and smarter than I am, because, you know, water seeks its own level. And it's a known fact that you will become the sum average of the five people you hang around. And that's a scary thought. So, you know, look around and see who you're hanging around out there. And if you want to be like the people you're hanging around, then keep hanging around them. And if you don't, you know, find some new friends. So,
by the way, and I'm just not really the marriage. It's been proven over and over again that people are married and one of the two people starts hanging around with people that have gotten divorced, they're much more likely to get divorced. It's just one of those things. And so you're right, our peer groups make a big difference. So, you know, I want to, so now, I mean, so I got to help my dad through that grief and kept ministering to him the rest of his life. And by the way, I have a miracle story also related to my brother after he died. My brother had cancer, was pretty left-brained, very logical, very, very scientific. He was a member of Mensa, very, very good mind. But he had a very, very difficult time logically grasping God, which I don't think we actually can logically grasp God is the problem. It's an intuitive leap is what it takes, an act of faith to get this to an experience of God.
Yep.
So he never really had too much of an inner experience of God, and he wasn't at all convinced that he really would survive the death of his body. Because I know many people have that question in their mind.
Right.
Luckily for me, that question has been answered, but for many people it hasn't been answered. And he was one of those people. 2 days before he died, I sat there in the hospital and we talked about, well, if you have a chance to give me a sign, will you do it? And he says, I'd be happy to. But it's funny, he was a very ethical person. One of the things he said to us is he says, if I do it, I have to do it in a way that would not interfere with anybody else's free will or anything else. Whatever I do, you'll know that it happened. So we actually had this that was just my brother, very intelligent, kind and loving. And this is what happened. About 2 months after he died, I had a dream one night and I was talking with him. Suddenly I realized, hey, I'm talking to my brother. And I have an experience of it, real strong experience of him. So I woke up, and just as I woke up, my wife said to me, hey, you know what happened last night? I had a dream. Your brother was talking to me. My wife said that to me.
Wow.
And my wife isn't one to have those sorts of experiences. I've had a fair amount of that kind of thing. She's had almost none of it. In fact, I'd say none of it. And so the fact that she had it, said it to me first, And I had it the same night. It was, to me, his clear method of letting us know that he found a way to give the message to us that life goes on after this life.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that keeps people away from God, because I've spoken to a lot of people, a lot of atheists, and you know, you dig and you dig and you dig, and there's always an event that turns them, you know, and usually it's when the whole concept, the age-old concept of why do bad things happen to good people. A lot of
right.
people just have a problem dealing with that, you know, and that's part of the grief process, because that's called bargaining, you know, and many things cannot be bargained away. Cancer, you know, how do you negotiate cancer? You can't. How do you negotiate death? You can't. The only thing you can really negotiate is, let's say you have a romantic love affair and all of a sudden, you know, the girl dumps you. The best you could hope for is try to negotiate and say, well, can't we still be friends? You know, and you might get a yes out of that. But the only one to go to in with cancer or death or whatever is God. And there's, you know, we call those foxhole prayers when the soldier's out there fighting and bullets are whizzing over his head and he wishes he was back home and he prays this prayer, oh God, if you get me out of this, I'll go to church every Sunday and I'll stop cheating on my wife and I'll stop beating her and you know, I'll be good, you know. And when things don't happen, I knew he didn't exist anyway, you know, and boom. And hopefully we can hope that in their last waking moments of death, in their deathbed, that they can somehow meet God, you know, and that maybe doesn't seem very fair, but, you know, Jesus told that story about the two thieves on the cross. You know, one of them at his very last moment accepted him, and he says, surely you'll be with me in paradise, and even did a parable, and says, you know, a man went out and hired a bunch of people in the morning, and he says, I'll pay you $20 to work all day, and did it again at noon, $20 all day, or the rest of the day, and did it again at 3, did it again at 5, and then did it again like 15 minutes before quitting time. And when it was time to get paid, they were instructed to pay those that were hired last first. So when those that are hired earlier saw that the ones who only worked 15 minutes were getting paid $20 too, they expected more. And then they complained when they got their $20. And he says, hey, are you angry because I'm generous with my money? I agreed to pay you 20. You got your 20. Take your money and go. And that's kind of how it is with God. Some people are going to make it into heaven at the last second of their life as an old person. And other people who lived a great life all of their life, who kind of feel like they deserved salvation, which salvation is not deserved. It's a great parable. It's a great thing to comprehend. Let's hold that thought and let's take a break, and we'll talk about that when we come back. So we will be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go, to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back with Robert Seidel, attorney, minister, and all-around amazing guy. We were talking before the break about bargaining and making a comparison about God. You wanted to comment on that, Robert.
I'm just going to say this thing spiritually. Probably one of the great miracles of Christianity, which is quite rare in the world. I've studied all the world religions. Is the idea that your grace and salvation is assured through as a gift to you, not through something you earn. That's a very critical thing because almost no other philosophy has that. But and as a result, that leads to some of the problems we see in other parts of the world sometimes. But let me just say this to you. But you know what I would like to share about is the grief and what some of the lessons I learned about grieving after my dad died. I also was very blessed. The day he died, there was multiple reasons why, but it was in the first day of 2013. He was born in 1913, so it was a full century after he was born. I said, Dad, I think I'll spend the night here. That was New Year's night. He took my hand and said, I think that's a good idea. Now, he had actually been not able to keep food down for about 3 weeks, so we knew he couldn't be going on real long, but nonetheless, we didn't quite know when his transition would be. I chose to spend the night at his house that night. That early next morning, a very miraculous thing happened for me. I suddenly had this wonderful, very, very happy feeling in a dream. Again, I remember in complete detail. The details I don't remember, but I felt this great sense of joy and happiness, contentment, and so much so. My dad was in it with me, and we were somewhere, and I was thinking, I wonder why I'm in the dream. Why is my dad so happy? Well, then shortly after that, I woke up. So that was like 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and I went and checked on him. He had just made his transition just a little bit before that. So he also was able to give me an experience of love before he passed. But what I do want to say then, after that year that came on, so I've just kind of left that year, it's about a year and a half now, I went to and this is a very valuable resource for your listeners, if I went to a grief share group at a Lutheran church, the Lutheran church I go to. I was the only man there, they were mostly women. I got to know them so well, and of course some people coming and leaving, but nonetheless, it was a pretty small, intimate group of people. And they also showed a video series. It was like a 10-week series or something, and they would just keep recycling and starting it over again. And I learned an awful lot, which has actually contributed to my spiritual growth hugely as a human being. Yes, when somebody dies, we could have all sorts of feelings, and that's one of the things. They had a lot of well-known people on this, and people we don't know on this video series, like Zig Ziglar talking about the grief of losing his daughter, and all sorts of people saying, grief is not rational at all. The emotional self is not rational. We may know the person's better off, but we still may be angry. So I was with people, some of which, one woman's husband, I can only say this because you don't know who it is, even though they've been married like 50 years, he committed suicide. And the reasons were is he had a bad stroke. And but they'd had a bad argument that morning. So she had this terrible grief and regret,
guilt.
And remorse. Guilt, yeah, absolutely awful. And yet I saw her in the course of about 7 or 8 months, or actually a year basically, turn it around to the point of being optimistic and happy and joyous. And that can only be through the grace of God. I just want to say two women. One was a lot younger woman, had husbands that committed suicide. Other women, one woman's husband went in the hospital and he didn't get the treatment she thought was right. And they also treated her fairly rudely. And that's not an uncommon story either. So the point is that these sorts of things are very common. But what I learned in the grief sharing, not only do we have every emotion, one of the most things I like the most in this series is share with God all of your feelings. God doesn't mind it. Even if you're angry, even if you're upset, even if you doubt God, share all that with God in your prayers. God,
He
can handle it. And not only that, a good example is my mother. She devoted her life to God, and yet the last couple of years of her life, she was in a body that was, not working very well, and also in a mind that didn't work well. And it's like, I'm just going to say, is this how you reward people that devote their lives to you? But you don't say it with anger. At least I didn't. But they even said, you know, it's okay to even be angry at God. You could even be yell at God if you need to. And I want to create space for anybody listening. If you need to yell at God, yell at God. I mean, because you're still in dialogue with God then. Mm-hmm. You're still staying in communication. That has changed, believe it or not, that has changed my life. I did not realize how much I had suppressed in my relationship to God. You know, in trying to be a good person and trying to be a devoted servant of God, I think I had suppressed a lot of my doubts and my worries and my fears, try to push them in my unconscious mind. I started confessing everything, and believe it or not, I do it every morning, including this morning. I spend about a half hour or an hour, sometimes even in bed, just confessing to God things that are going on in my mind, you know, issues. And I just confess it all to God right then.
Well, and I appreciate you talking about the suicides, because obviously in order to get to suicide, you've got to first be in the stage of grief of depression. It's very rare that someone will commit suicide if they're not depressed about something. Let's talk about depression. You know, doctors would say that clinical depression, which sometimes happens like a stroke or just some people are born with clinical depression. Some people believe it's genetically inherited and so on. And some doctors would say that it's okay to have antidepressants prescribed. What is your opinion, because that's kind of controversial to some people, antidepressants?
As a lot of things in life, I've studied and researched a lot. And beyond that, two different things. My brother who passed with pancreatic cancer, about a year before that diagnosis, which is sort of sad, he discovered he had a sleep disorder for a long time. He finally said, you know, I finally realized, they put him on Prozac. He finally took Prozac. For the first time, he seemed a lot more peaceful and a lot happier. This was before he was diagnosed with cancer. He could sleep better and everything. He said, you know, I realize now I've suffered from chronic depression for many years. And he explained to me all about antidepressants. Antidepressants can be lifesavers. And let me just say this right here. I've gone through depression myself, and antidepressants, I'm going to say, including for myself, can and have been a lifesaver. God works in many channels. And one of the things I've heard is that we have to be careful not to get into the spiritual ego. The spiritual ego is like, well, you know what? I've got faith in God. I don't need anything else. That's ego. That's pride. And that kind of pride is not really what God wants. True humility is when we admit that we need help and get help, whatever it might mean, whether it's going to a grief share group or anything else. Get that help you need and then get back in the game of life fully. Antidepressants, if you knew how many people are on antidepressants, probably a third of the people know are on antidepressants. They may talk about it or they may not. When my brother got Prozac, the doctor goes, oh, you want vitamin P? I mean, it was such a common prescription. Now, some people might say it's overprescribed. I'm not going to get into that. But I am going to say, if you're stuck in a dark hole, if you can't get out of it, an antidepressant can be a miracle to help you. I know that for sure.
Yeah, and absolutely, some people have a bad experience with an antidepressant. Then try a different antidepressant. There's different groups. There's different kinds. There's different dosages. And so, you know, don't just give up and say, oh, no. You know, because there are so many different kinds and so many different ways, you have to experiment a little. And, you know, let's face it, God gave us doctors. Where would we be without doctors? And
well, wouldn't it be silly if somebody said they wouldn't take antibiotics and they're suffering from a terrible tooth infection? We're just lucky we live in a time when they have antibiotics. People used to die from that sort of thing.
It's hypocritical to take an antibiotic or an aspirin and not be open to an antidepressant, if that's the case. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are suffering from depression, some just a low-grade depression that just makes their life mediocre and they're never happier. You know, the Eeyore syndrome, I like to call it. You know, Eeyore, the donkey on Disney character. You know, the glass is always half empty. You know, oh, woe is me. They're always complaining about something. They're a martyr. Nobody likes to be around a person like that. And a lot of people think that an antidepressant is a drug, like a recreational drug. It makes you dopey. It makes you dulls the senses. Not the case. It just replaces that chemical imbalance. And I'm glad to hear you say that.
Well, I want to say one thing more about that. I've seen lots of my clients, their lives have been saved by antidepressants. And even very religious people who thought they could solve it all themselves, and their whole life was falling apart, and finally they were willing to take one, and things came back together again. It's a matter of humility, again, and being willing to, I don't know why there's a taboo, I guess, I don't know, there just is. But I think it's going away. I have to be honest with you. I think it's going away. I did a whole show on the whole topic after Robin Williams committed suicide about depression and suicide and antidepressants, and I had a top talk show host, the number one of the top talk show hosts in the United States was, his father had committed suicide, and he's on antidepressants, so we spent the whole show talking about that. So I think it needs to get out of the closet. A lot more people than most people know are on antidepressants. It's really, and by the way, just so people know, they're not happy pills. There's no black market for antidepressants, believe it or not. There's not, because they don't make you happy. They just put a floor there so you don't fall into a dark cave. But people don't get high on them. So they, like I said, you don't go on the street and say, oh, where, who can I buy some antidepressants from? You said something very profound at the beginning. If everybody thought about it, it really changed their lives. God recycles everything and uses everything. My brother, because he just literally, this was before, again, he was diagnosed with cancer, but he was just suffering from a lot of depression. We didn't, none of us really knew what it was exactly. So he finally got the Prozac, and it changed his life so much. So he sort of opened the pathway for me to open myself to it when I needed it. So people around us, and I'm hopefully going to help some of you. And the same thing with grief. You know, you started out by saying something in the very beginning, I always like to listen to everything people say, and you said, my dad passed away, unfortunately. You know something? Yes, as mortal beings on this earth, we do think of death as unfortunate. But actually, in the bigger picture, it's not unfortunate. Maybe the timing can be unfortunate. It's not unfortunate because it's not a tragedy because people go on to something wonderful or can go on to something wonderful. So therefore, it's really not a tragedy. Sometimes it's hard for us to adjust to it. That's a different issue. Sometimes the loss of that person causes us great loss and grief, and that's a different issue completely. It's actually, trust me, when you see somebody like my dad, I asked him a week or so, well, two things he said in the week before he died. People find this amusing. But he said, one is, I don't know if I'm ready to go yet. I'm still having a good time. That, he said that to his my dear friend and caretaker. But I talked to him. I said, Dad, now you're not getting any food. He was very conscious. I said, do you want me to go out? You could take you to the hospital or have somebody come here and get you on an IV or something. Do you want that? He goes, no, absolutely not. So he knew it was time to go. And God bless him. I mean, I'm glad he had a chance to go. Because it would have been, I mean, to be trapped there in that condition, that would not be good either. So there comes a time, I think, in almost every human life when death is actually a gift. So we just have to sort of give up some of our fear of death, understand that it's not the terrible, awful thing that we think it is sometimes. Does that sound logical? Is that going too far for some people?
No, you're absolutely right. And we have come to the end of our hour. We have just enough time, a couple of minutes, to say that prayer you wanted to say. Thank you again for coming in and doing this, Robert. You're an amazing guy, and I just thank you for this interview. Go ahead and pray for our audience and us, if you would.
I will be happy to. We'll have some fun. Well, very powerful prayer, very quick. Holy Spirit, by Jesus Christ and our Heavenly Father, I pray right now that you pour down on anybody who's listening to this message, wherever and whenever time it is, and bring a healing to their mind, spirit, and soul. So if they're suffering from a physical malady, they're healed. If they're suffering from emotional distress, they're healed. If they're suffering from grief, they're lifted out of the darkness of grief. I pray that the infinite Holy Spirit pour into them, deliver them, lift them up, and may the infinite grace of Jesus Christ and all that is good be on all of your listeners and all people everywhere. And so it is. Amen.
Awesome prayer. Thank you again, Robert, for coming on the show. And everybody, we'll see you next Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. And we do rebroadcast on Saturdays at 3:30 Pacific as well. And every single one of these broadcasts are recorded podcasts that you can get on DaveNass.com. And don't forget those free gifts I'm giving away. God bless everybody, and thank you. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.